You're also taking the kids to TED 2.
Yes, because who doesn't want to take their kids to a movie about an adorable talking teddy bear? It's Teddy Ruxpin without his overalls on. That's what it is.
Yeah, Teddy Rex mixed together with George Carlin. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. I am your host, Adam Mangum. I am joined first by Dick Harmon of the Deseret News. We talk about Tyler Hawes' legacy and where he fits in with the great Cougars. We also talk about the top storylines and things we learned coming out of spring football. Matt and I then talk about the men's volleyball and their big week against number one Hawaii. We also talk about the possibility of scheduling UVU. And we outline the best and worst case scenarios for the 2015 football Cougars. Once again, this is the Cougar Fan Rise and Shout podcast. Check us out on Podbean. Check us out on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Subscribe to us on iTunes and listen to us right now. Welcoming to the Cougar Fan Rise and Shout podcast, frequent guest and friend Dick Harmon of the Deseret News. Dick, welcome back to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Adam, for having me, and congratulations on the developments you guys have had.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Tonight I thought it'd be a good deal. You know, we're sitting here in the dog days of the off season, where there's not a lot of hot news to discuss, but I thought one thing, now that the season is in the rearview mirror and we have an opportunity to kind of reflect, Tyler Hawes finished a fantastic career at BYU, ended up as the all-time leading scorer, breaking Jimmer Fredette's record. As someone who's covered BYU sports for a long time and has seen a lot of the BYU basketball greats come and go, I was curious where you'd put Tyler Hawes, not necessarily as a ranking, but how would you define his legacy in the four seasons that he played for BYU?
You know, Adam, there's a whole bunch of things that stand out about his career at BYU. He, in my estimation, slips himself right into being a legacy player, a top 10, top 15, top 25 player of all time. He was a workhorse. I don't know that I've ever seen anybody that worked as hard as he did all around during the season, in the off season, during the season. His scoring ability was the direct result of his dedication and his drive and the many hours that he put in. Aside from that, he's just a quality guy. I mean, he's one of the best guys to interview. He is kind. He's humble. He is very sincere. He loved his teammates. He was dedicated to BYU. He was respectful of his coaches, respectful of the media. He had tremendous games under tremendous pressure with defenses focusing on him, man defenses, doubling up on two men on him, three men on him, people catching him. His game was such that he had to run almost continually on the offensive end of the floor to get open, to get through screens. So it wasn't just a guy, you know, shooting the ball. It was a lot of movement without the ball. And he did it about as good as anybody has. The mid-range shot is really a lost art. And he brought that back in a way that I don't know if you even see in the NBA or around college basketball, people shooting that 8 to 10 to 12 foot jump shot and doing it so consistently and so well, quick release, deadly aim. No, he'll go down in the annals of BYU basketball as a fabulous, icon.
Yeah.
Well deserving.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing missing from his resume, but frankly, it was missing from the resumes of almost anyone not named Danny Ainge and Jimmer Fredette, is the ability to get deeper into the NCAA tournament. Do you think fans got a little spoiled with the recent success that Jimmer and that team had in the tournament? And do you think that all affects how Tyler will be viewed by fans? Or do you think 5 years from now, we'll just remember, as you said, him as a top 15 type player of all time?
You know, if it does affect the way they view him, that would be unfortunate, because it's not his fault. That BYU had Austin hurt and eighties or hurt, two guys that really could have helped him. It's not his fault that Eric Mika went on a mission at a time that they could have used a center player. It's not his fault that they played a freshman like Kafutsi in the middle, just learning on the job as he was going through. And, you know, those things are not his fault. And so, you know, they could, if BYU would have just had one or two more pieces of the puzzle, there's no doubt in my mind that they would have handily held on to beat Mississippi. I think that they probably would have been very challenged against Xavier, maybe won that game. This team was capable of doing that. They just simply needed some more pieces. They needed a defensive stopper. They needed a seasoned post player that could take the pressure off on both ends of the court, a guy that could stop people at the rim. Kafusi was becoming that, but, you know, for one person to then be held accountable for maybe, you know, postseason failures, that's a little bit heavy, and I'd hope that BYU fans would not go down that line with Tyler Hawes, because he certainly is deserving of all the numbers that he put up and the things that he did. So, you know, I think if you break it down and look at it, the smart ones will say, you know, he did as well as he could with who he was with. And he had some great players that he played with, but there were missing pieces. This was a smoke and mirrors BYU basketball team. They had to run fast to maybe hide some of the deficiencies they had. And so, you know, they were what they were, and they did it very, very well.
Yeah, they absolutely did. So let's stay on basketball for just one second before we switch to football. As you look at next year and the years beyond that, it seems as if BYU is going to be loaded, that the problems of this year of not having enough big men and maybe lacking some defensive stoppers on the perimeter don't project to be a problem. Do you think this is potentially we're walking into a great era of BYU basketball with all the highly touted recruits that will be all on the team at the same time? Or do you think this is one of those things where you have to kind of wait and see because it rarely works out as planned?
I think you got to wait and see. There's some injured players. You've got, you know, Austin needs to be cleared to play. He's still having problems with his hamstring, surprisingly, and that's not good news. But they plan on him coming back even if he doesn't have a scholarship. Jamal Aites is a guy that they really, really need. He can remind you of a Keeney Young type of a player, an undersized guy that can play the post and play the wing and can be very athletic. He's had a setback. He's had to go back of not bearing weight on that foot, and this is a problem that's gone on through September. So you can get excited about certain aspects of the coming back team, but there's also pieces that you just have to wait and see. But the real comeback would be 2016, when the Lone Peak and recruiting class comes in and are off missions. And, you know, you got Nick Emery back next year, but you don't have Micah back. But there are a certain set of athletes that got BYU a top 10 ranking by ESPN in recruiting. And those players are filtering back, but they're not all back yet. So I would say the future looks very bright. A new facility, practice facility being built, changes in the Marriott Center that will make it even more comfortable for fans and be able to raise more money with season tickets being sold to quality seats. And, you know, things look very good. Dave Rose on a multi-year, never done before in my memory, that they've re-signed a coach for that many years and an extended contract. So I think things look very well.
Yeah, and certainly Rose deserves and has earned that contract. Flipping over to football, we're a week and a half past the last practice, but it was a strange spring where he had a senior on his way out doing most of the quarterbacking and the contact drills. But it was an important spring to get some of these new players on offense acclimated to the offense, as well as some of these guys that didn't play as much last year who will play bigger roles. What was the biggest takeaway for you from that offensive side of the ball? Things that you think will make a big difference for the Cougars in 2015?
Well, the first thing that stood out in my mind when I went out there to watch practice is the recovery of Taysom Hill. Because he was limited in how much he would run, and he could run, and he could move around, he looked good, but because he was limited, he worked very hard on his reads and his timing and his passing, and he looked very, very good. He looked as good as I've ever seen him. He looked very consistent. I think that he can still improve with his accuracy, but he was more accurate than he's been. I think he's getting more confident in what he's doing. He is a tremendous legacy type of an athlete, one that comes around and only once in a while. So I think for Cougar fans to look forward to a season with him as a senior, knowing all that he knows, all that he's been through, and then the second thing is the receivers he has. You know, you can go down the line. I mean, you've got a guy 6'6", Mitch Matthews, who has a vertical leap of 36-plus inches. You've got Nick Kurtz, who was injured last year. Fans did not see him. He's out there running around making plays. Devon Blackman, a speedster that transferred from Oregon, he's out there being acclimated. He's far more capable of helping than he was last year. He's going to step in there. You've got Mitch Jurgens. It turned out to be a real asset in some aspects. He had his up and downs, but he is talented. You got Taron Houck on the inside, Brian Sampson at tight end, Colby Pearson, Kurt Henderson. You've got a whole flock of receivers that can be in a fast rotation and can help each other on the field. So those two things stood out probably the most as I watched spring practice is number one, Taysom, and then the other thing was the quality, playmaking ability of these receivers and their timing with Taysom.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that was reported on quite frequently as you read about the spring practice was the defense and getting torn up a little bit by the offense. And even Bronco mentioned that on occasion with in his interviews. Is this something that we, as fans, that we should be worried about going in? Is this just something where there was just a lot more growth and younger players on that side, or is this a big worry for the Cougars in 2015?
Well, I think you got to put it a little bit into perspective. Number one, you had a lot of people missing. All of the top linebackers were not participating in spring practice. So right there, put it in perspective. In the secondary, you did not have some of the corners out there on a consistent basis. I'm talking about guys like Jordan Prater. I mean, Jordan Prater is starting cornerback. He was not out there. You had a guy like Micah Hanneman that just came off the mission in January, and he was out there and sometimes starting the corner. You had Michael Davis out there, and he was doing pretty good. Kai Nikhil was out there, and the Mike Shelton, and so you're rebuilding that. But here's the deal. Broncos taking over. And one of the first things that he wanted to do was create the expectation of the level of effort and the speed at which these guys had to play. And so that was the number one priority. The execution or the coverage in the design was secondary to the effort. And so what you have to look for in a fan is, yeah, these guys got burned at things, but they were trying to work on the effort level that they were expected to do and to play at before they were asked to do the execution part of it. So, you know, in the long-term run, in the offseason and going into fall, I think the other parts will fall in place once Bronco has them getting the effort that's required for him, running to the ball, all 11 players, running to their spots from the sidelines, being prepared to go fast and to go hard to defend this offense and other offenses. You know, and Bronco mentioned many times that, you know, they had a ways to go. But they had a ways to go in a lot of things, but they had a ways to go in the first thing that he expected of them, an execution was secondary to that. So, you know, if you put into perspective what was happening, then you throw out new guys like Snow College All-American Eric Tanaka out there for the first time, you can understand why that defense struggled. All the main linebackers not able to play weren't out there. We're talking about Harvey Longa, Pakua was missing at times, and that hurt him. It hurt him in execution in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll find out for real in fall camp, of course. Also, that first game against Nebraska. Well, Dick, we really appreciate you coming on the podcast. Always enjoyable listening to your perspective, and we'll of course read you at the Deseret News, and we'll have you on again sometime soon.
Well, thank you, Adam. Thanks for having me, and good luck to you and your brother and all that you do with a great podcast.
Matt, this is episode 182 of our podcast, but the first episode of the Cougar Fan Rise and Shout podcast.
Welcome aboard!
Welcome aboard indeed. So Matt, we may gain a few new listeners this week, so we thought we'd take this time to introduce ourselves. So I am Adam and you are Matt, and do we need to cover anything else?
How about the part where we explain that we have absolutely no business, as we're not authoritative on anything.
Authoritative, we are not. This is true. Though I was a sports writer like 20 years ago.
There you go.
A little less than that. And let's see. You are expert, I believe, in 1990s sports video games.
Very, very good. Very good. You get a little bit past that vintage. I'm not as good, but still very competitive.
Yes, yes. You also, let's see, what other expertise did I have written down for you here in my notes? I also have down the expertise that you, at one point, could recite The Princess Bride word for word from beginning to end.
Yep. I've actually done that.
Yeah.
Actually proved that ability.
My expertise mainly sits in geeky superhero movies. All vintages, 80s, 90s, today. Sound like a radio station. 80s, 90s, and today! That's about it. Well, I guess baseball. I am a baseball encyclopedia, truly.
And we like sports.
And we like sports.
Let's just call it this.
We will end up talking, of course, our conversations revolve around BYU sports. We will touch on professional sports, other college sports outside of BYU, movies, some TV, and also neither of us live in the state of Utah.
Nope.
I live in Minnesota.
I live in Texas.
Texas, yes. Yes, you do. Yes, you
Houston,
do.
Texas, baby.
Houston, Texas. So Matt, let's keep this show going, because it's not really about us.
No.
Well, actually,
it's definitely not.
It actually is totally about us. But we're very excited to be partnered with Cougar Fan. Eventually, in a few weeks, we'll have the podcast will be hosted there. Until then, it's on our Podbean site. That's ajmangum.podbean.com. You can always, of course, find us on iTunes if you search for the Rise and Shout podcast. Subscribe to us there. You also can download the Podbean app and listen to us from there, or stream us using the web at ajmangum.podbean.com. And you can always get in contact with us by tweeting at BYU_RiseShout. So if you like the show, make sure to follow us on Twitter, and make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. So Matt, one of the things we do is what we like to call the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
And our first tweet bag question.
You're already knocking this guy's question. You called it a tweet bad question. A
tweet bad question.
I mean, you haven't even read the question yet, and I know what question you're about to read. Take umbrage, my friend.
It's an excellent question. It's an excellent question there, Mr. Umbridge. So appropriately, it is Justin D. Sweeney, at Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter, who's I think been listening to us since single digits, maybe early double digits. I'm not sure.
He's very early in podcast episodes.
Yes, very early. So Justin gave us a podcast question last week. We previewed the Major League Baseball season. We'll get to some of that here in a second. But he asked the best baseball-themed movie. He offers a few suggestions, but I don't think we're limited to these, including Sandlot, Field of Dreams, 42, Angels in the Outfield, and For Love of the Game. Matt, do you have a favorite baseball-themed movie?
Well, what was the movie with the kid who all of a sudden could pitch? Do you remember that movie?
Can it be your favorite if you can't even remember the name of it?
I'm not saying it's my favorite. I'm just trying to remember the name of the movie.
Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year. I'm trying to also round out the list, right? So what's Major League? Bull Durham?
The Natural could be on the
Natural
list.
The Natural's a really good one.
Bad News Bears?
Yep.
Let's see.
There's some great baseball-themed cinema out there.
Yes. League of Their Own is another one that, that could be on that list. Eight Men Out.
No Crying in Baseball?
There is No Crying in Baseball. Eight Men Out is a little slow, I think, for a modern audience, but a great tale about the 1990 World Series Black Sox scandal. Matt, do you have a favorite?
Oh, I do.
Okay, well,
and it's not even really a question for me. My favorite is Field of Dreams.
James Earl Jones' speech about baseball is of course, extremely classic.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America's rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, is a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good, and it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
So Matt, I'm going to say, I'm going to pick a different one just because it's probably the same for me, Field of Dreams, but so we can talk about a different one. I am a massive fan, and again, this is a slow movie to modern audiences, and I also get the fact that, you know, Robert Redford is like a 40-year-old, plays himself as a 19-year-old, and then as a 40-year-old, and he's actually, like, I think he's older than the guy with the mustache, Wilford Brimley, is his manager in that movie. I mean, I'm... You know, but anyway, I love that story of the legend of Roy Hobbs and Robert Redford. And, you know, again, it's a strange, you know, probably strange to modern viewers. And of course, I also have to give a honorable mention to the aforementioned A League of Their Own.
So A League of Their Own's all right.
It's fantastic. Tom Hanks is a master. And at his peak, Matt, in that movie. So let's go on to getting into BYU sports with our segment we like to call Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
All right. So first up, Matt, is BYU men's volleyball. They have a big weekend coming up. It's a match against number one ranked Hawaii in the Smith Fieldhouse in Provo, game that will be on BYU TV, called by friend of the podcast, Jerem Jordan. Matt, they had a bounce back weekend last weekend. How do you rate their chances after showing what they could do against Cal State Northridge on the road, winning all six sets they played? How do you rate their chances against a very, very good Hawaii squad?
I think, you know, you do hope that the successful weekend in Northridge is a sign that the team has kind of turned a corner after what was a very painful stretch. But even in the Smith Fieldhouse, when you look at the kind of the body of work as a whole, I think you have to still see BYU as a definite underdog in this matchup. I want to say I think they can do it, but if I were a betting man, I might take the favorite in this matchup.
Yeah, they are 21-3 all time against Hawaii in Provo. But that being said, it's kind of a reversal of fortunes where BYU is playing the role of Hawaii and Hawaii's the team to beat, right? Mm-hmm. My prediction would be that they split against them, which will help in their seeding coming into the MSPF playoffs here in a little bit. But, you know, I like it. I think I'm just more excited that, again, you and I have talked about this quite a bit this year on the podcast. Because of BYU TV, you and I are fans of the men's volleyball team. We get to actually see these games, which is fantastic.
Oh, it's fantastic. As a fan outside of the state of Utah, to have this type of access to BYU sports is unreal. It's a ton of fun, especially when you have a team that you're really excited about like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And a team that I think has a very bright future in seasons to come. Matt, another theme that came out this week is Coach Rose of the men's basketball team did several interviews, Salt Lake Tribune, among others. He talked about several things, but one of them was replacing recently departed assistant coach Pope, and also potentially playing Mark Pope's new gig in Utah Valley. Matt, how do you feel about playing UVU?
I think that could get interesting. You know, I think there are some good basketball programs in the state of Utah. I think that this hire demonstrates that UVU wants to get serious about their program and where they would like to kind of fit into that group. And maybe it opens up that door I don't know if this develops any type of rivalry or anything, but I think it's good for basketball in the state of Utah if these teams all play each other a little bit. I know the idea has been thrown out and thrown around in the past about like a Utah tournament where you get Utah State and Weber State and Utah, and maybe you get UVU, BYU in there. I think something like that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, in the past, and this is something that that Jay Drew of the Salt Lake Tribune, also a friend of the podcast, mentioned, is that we'd kind of had an unwritten rule, apparently, to not play UVU as long as Dick Hunsaker was the coach. He did not release Ryan Toulson to BYU when he expressed interest after his mission, and I think there's a chance now that that may happen when it has not happened in the past. So for me, that like I said, I think it's a positive. It's another good in-state game to potentially have on the out-of-conference schedule. Also, Matt, for Cougars in the News, the BYU dance team, the Cougarettes, won the, won the hip-hop national dance competition in Daytona Beach, Florida. So congratulations to the Cougarettes for representing us quite well, quite well. I once took a Cougarette out on a date.
How'd that work out for you?
It's all right.
You know.
I wasn't the best or worst date I've ever had. There's actually no story. That's rare for me. There's usually a story.
There's not like a funny story to this?
No, I could insert.
There's always a funny story.
I could insert another dating story in it. You know, I could say she dumped me on my birthday. I could say, that.
That was a good one.
That was a good one. I could say that that she dropped the F-bomb within about the first 10 minutes of the date. That also
happened. Wait a minute. Wasn't that the same person?
No. Totally different people. About the same. That's about the same time frame, though.
Okay, you're right. Okay,
that was a blind date. That was a blind date, and she dropped the F-bomb in the first 10 minutes. But she was quoting.
That's when you know you've got a keeper.
Yeah, she was quoting, so it doesn't count, she said. So anyway,
she was quoting herself from the day before.
Yeah, she was quoting herself from the day before. It doesn't count if you're quoting.
Yesterday,
somebody,
I got really mad, and I said this word.
So Matt, also not directly BYU news, because he's not a necessarily BYU guy, but Jeremy Guthrie of the Kansas City Royals won his first start, and they are 7-1.
Yeah, they're off to a hot start.
Yes, them and Detroit both. Detroit's 8-1. We talked about this last week on our MLB preview show. I believe you picked Minnesota to win the Central. Is that correct?
I think you're remembering incorrectly, my friend. You've bumped your head.
Yes, I am.
I picked Detroit to take that.
Yes, you did, and I picked Cleveland.
So yeah, how's that working out?
Eight games in. But, the Red Sox did take 2 of 3 from your – what's that team in – Do they play in DC? I don't know what their name is.
Really? We're gonna play it like that, are we?
Yep.
Hey, listen, it's just 9 games in. It's no big deal. It's Nationals, nobody's worried. It's gonna be fine.
Yeah. Right. Tied with Philadelphia and Miami at the bottom of the National League East.
How can anyone take a team seriously called the Phillies?
You just don't like your rivals. I mean, you call the Braves the Barves.
That's because that's their name.
You're ridiculous. All right, Matt. So I was at opening day here at Target Field in Minneapolis on Monday. Beautiful day, and the Twins are terrible.
Yeah.
They are terrible.
They have the same problem here, but I love going to games. So I will go to several Astros games this year just because I like to be at the ballpark.
So today was game at Target Field was game three, okay? We're recording this on Wednesday night. I saw a promotion got to my email from the Twins, $5 walk-up tickets.
Yes.
It's good for the baseball fan on a budget, bad if you are an actual Twins fan. And hope that they win. All right, Matt, let's move on to BYU football, our most frequently discussed topic.
Yes.
Let's talk about best and worst case scenarios. So we this came to me as I was reading about on CBS Sports. They had kind of a question about what would be the best and worst case scenarios. And instead of rehashing their stuff, I thought we'd just give it our own take, Matt. So let's start with the negative and then move on to the positive. By the way, that I'm referencing is CBSSports.com's Tom Fornelli, who got asked by a BYU fan on Twitter about best and worst case scenarios. So Matt, looking at that schedule, looking at everything we got, what is the worst case scenario? Give me a few details of how the season rolls out. Worst case.
I think the worst case scenario, I guess before I get to the punchline, overall, I think the worst case scenario is you lose all of the big games that everybody's excited about. You lose, you know, the Nebraskas, the Boise State, the Michigan, Missouri. You lose all of those, and then you also give up one that you probably should have had.
Like a Cincinnati or
Fresno State, Utah State, you know, one that you probably should have had. But and so I think that worst case scenario probably puts you at a 6-6 finish.
I think the worst case scenario looks worse than that. But go ahead.
You really think the worst case scenario is worse than that? The worst. I mean, I look at that. I say you lose Nebraska, Boise State, UCLA, Michigan. Then maybe you drop to Missouri.
That's five.
And then. Than one of these other games.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Okay, Connecticut is a given. Okay, they're terrible. Wagner's
right,
a given. So those are two. San
Off
Jose State, I'll give that. So there's your three given wins. Okay?
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to give, in a worst-case scenario, I'm not going to give East Carolina, Cincinnati, and definitely Utah State. I don't think any BYU fan should be taking them for granted after the last few years. Okay?
But so, do you really think that's possible?
That we only win three? No, but I think it's possible we only win five. To me, the worst case scenario is five, which may not seem like a big difference, but I think it is a big difference because I'm saying we lose two of those games in the worst case scenario. So in order for the worst case scenario to happen, are we agreed that the worst case scenario means that Taysom Hill is not taking many snaps in 2015?
The worst case scenario would include Taysom Hill getting hurt because there's no way you only win five or six games with a healthy Taysom Hill. I don't care who else you have on the field.
Great. Agreed. So does it include most likely Jamal Williams being hurt?
Yeah, probably.
Probably. Does it include basically that defense that we're worried about but we're hopeful about because there were a lot of players that didn't play in spring, which is pointed out to us previously in this podcast by Dick Harmon, does include that defense being maybe a not even a top 60 defense.
Yeah.
Getting torched, right?
Right. You just get lit up.
And also probably in there is that some of these teams are better than we may believe today. The opponents, right?
Yeah, especially some of these, you know, that other tier of teams. Some of these might turn out to be better than we were expecting. I think with the big games, I think, you know, we'll look back and say, you know, they are who we thought they were, right?
They are who we thought they were.
Exactly. You saw where I was going with that.
Yes, I did.
But you know, one of these other teams could surprise you. I don't think that's Wagner or Wagner. If you're
German, the country.
German, really?
Yeah, Germany, there we go.
But you know, like a Fresno State, Cincinnati.
Yeah, I agree. So best case scenario, let's flip it on its head, dude. Flip it on its head. What are we looking at? What's the upside? Undefeated? Huh?
I feel, you know, that is a tough thing to do.
I don't think it's in the discussion of relevant possibilities. Is it possible? Yes. Is it numerically likely at all? No. Right? You're going to lose one of those road games against Nebraska, UCLA, and Michigan, and Missouri. I know it's neutral site, but I'm calling it a road game. And I'll throw Utah State in there, too.
Oh, yeah.
One of those games you're going to lose on the road, even if everything falls into place.
But June, I think, is possible. June, I think, is in the likely scenarios that are mathematically likely enough that I would put them up for consideration.
Yes, fire
11
away.
And one, baby. 11 and one.
I agree with you. I think the upside here is 11-1 or 10-2. I think those are your best case scenarios, and I think it becomes an all time great season. If you're 11-1 with this schedule, that means you beat Boise State, UCLA, Michigan, Nebraska, Missouri, a pretty good Utah State team, and with one of those teams, obviously, is a loss. But that's a pretty good resume. Unfortunately, I don't think 11-1 gets you into the college football playoff, but it might get you into a New Year's Six bowl.
I think this scheduled 11-1 gets you into one of those bowls. I think as far as getting into the playoff is concerned, if there's one thing we learn from our first run at this, is that's going to be really hard to predict.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's absolutely true. So Matt, let's talk about what has to happen. I think everyone believes this group of wide receivers is going to be phenomenal. I think that has to actually happen for the best case scenario, right?
Oh, yeah.
So what else has to happen in your perspective?
You got to stay healthy. Right. So, and I guess that's also kind of a given, right? But you got it. Taysom's got to stay healthy. And I think you need a healthy Jamal.
Yep. I agree.
For those things to happen.
I think you need even more than that. I think you need a true dual threat Taysom Hill. Dick Harmon talked about that Taysom, with his limited mobility this spring, worked a lot on his reads, a lot on his throwing. I think you would need a Taysom Hill better than we've ever seen him.
Yeah, well, that's probably true, given the teams that you're playing, right?
Yeah. Wow. I also think you need a couple of guys on the defensive side to break out and become stars, beyond Bronson Kafusi.
So when you say break out and become stars, you're talking Kyle Van Noy type of performance here?
No, not necessarily all-time great, but somebody's got to be the Shea Mearbrook, right? Somebody's got to be the, you know, some of our best safeties of the last 10 or 15 years of the Bronco era. You know, we've got to have, besides Kafusi, who I think will be much better than last year back with his hand on the ground, I think one of the linebackers, or maybe two, and one of the defensive backs, primarily a safety, has to have a breakout season. Whether that's Fred Warner, whether it's Longy, whether it's, Nacua, I don't know who it is, but you know, two or three of those guys have to become a force, because we're going to play against some very good offenses where somebody's going to have to make some plays. And even in the best case scenario, Taysom Hill is not going to be perfect and awesome in every game, right?
Right.
And you'll need a defense that can win a game for you at some point in the season when, you know, Hill throws a couple interceptions or the defense just isn't clicking that day.
Yeah, oh, I think that's absolutely true. Another piece of this, and I know I always go back to this same thing, but we need a mean and nasty offensive line.
Yes, I totally agree.
You're going to go into some of these places. These are going to be tough games to play. You know, you're playing in the Big House at Arrowhead against Missouri. I mean, that's basically a home game.
Yes.
For Missouri, right? I mean, I'm not necessarily as worried as far as the environment about the Rose Bowl, but Memorial Stadium, you got to go in there and you've got to establish a presence at the line of scrimmage, especially if you think Taysom Hill is going to be able to effectively run as a dual threat here.
Yes.
They've got to be mean.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that is the we have just laid out the blueprint for a special season. If all of those things happen, we could be looking back a year from now and saying that was one of the best BYU teams ever. Do I think that's likely? Like higher than 50%? No, I think a special team this being a special season is more like a 5 or 10% chance. Agreed.
You know what? I'm a homer.
You
right?
are a homer,
and we all know that.
Yes,
but I feel like the chances are a little bit better than that.
But
it's April. We're undefeated. We're undefeated so far. It's a tough schedule. It's a tough schedule. But I don't know about 11-1. If I would say that the odds of that are bigger than 5 or 10%. But I think getting into that 9-10 win range is very possible.
If you win 10 games, this is an extremely special season. And on the other hand, the team could be decent, and we could open the year like 1-3.
Yep, and they could still be good. And what will happen is they could do that and then run the table, and we really won't know how good they were.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because they will have actually gotten better over time, but at the same time, the competition will decrease.
Yeah, yeah. It's in a lot of ways, say they go 1-3, then they beat Connecticut, beat East Carolina, beat Cincinnati, beat Wagner, beat San Jose State. All of a sudden, you're going into that game at Arrowhead not really knowing how good the team is, right? Because the
right.
level of competition just isn't there, and that could be a wild and crazy game. But at that point, I'm not saying the season could be special, but it could still be a very good one if you hit that one with three losses and then beat Missouri, Fresno State, and Utah State going into the bowls. That ends up, I think, still being a pretty good season.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely front-loaded as a schedule.
Yes.
But in the scenario you just described is still a fun season to watch.
I completely agree. And it, you know, if people stay healthy, it should be entertaining, if nothing else.
Yep.
So, Matt, last week on the podcast, Jerem Jordan and I talked about the movies we are anticipating for the rest of the year. I'm going to flip it around a little bit for you and say summer movies, and by that I mean starting May 1st with Avengers Age of Ultron and ending at the end of August. If you could only see two movies, which quite frankly you probably will only see two of these movies, if you could only see two movies, which ones are they?
You know, there's a lot of good movies coming out this summer, and
yes.
and I think you will likely see a lot more movies than I will. In 2015, I think that's very safe to say.
Very safe.
But if I look at it as I look at this two different ways, what movies I'm most likely to actually see and what movies I would like to see. The movies that I'm most likely to see during that period of time are Minions.
Yes.
Okay. A 100% chance I see Minions in the theater. And you know, and I'm looking forward to it, actually. It looks entertaining to me.
And you're also taking the kids to Ted 2.
Yes, because who doesn't want to take their kids to a movie about an adorable talking teddy bear?
Yeah, yeah, it's like the teddy bear off of those Snuggle commercials.
It's Teddy Ruxpin what it is.
Teddy Ruxpin.
It's Teddy Ruxpin without his overalls on.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah, it's Teddy Ruxpin mixed together with George Carlin.
The other movie coming out that looks good to me that I will probably also see with now, the Minions, I think, will probably take all the kids. Pan, I don't think, will be for all of them. But Pan looks like an interesting movie to me as well.
Okay.
So if I look at movies that I'm likely to see, that's probably what I'm looking at.
Awesome. Awesome. What about, let's pick one that you want to see that maybe you aren't likely to see. Are you saying you're not likely to see Avengers Age of Ultron? Less than 50% chance?
I'm saying that I'm more likely to see the two movies I just listed, right?
But let's just
call a spade here, right? If I'm going to see the Avengers Age of Ultron in the theater, which I would like to do, I'm likely going to that movie by myself.
So on May 1st, I will, being the geeky dad that I am, my wife, myself, and my oldest daughter will be going to it during the day.
Yes!
I may or may not be taking work off that day.
Yes!
And the next day is Free Comic Book Day, so there's a fairly good chance that me and the girls end up at my favorite comic book store here locally.
So
that's my first movie, obviously. After that, it gets really tough for me. I think I am likely to see several of these movies. But I think Jurassic World is close. But if I had to say you could only watch two, I'm going to actually change my answer from what I said with Jerem last week. Ant-Man's also on that list, but Inside Out. I am a huge Pixar fan, and this is a very different movie for them. And I am interested in it quite a bit as a geeky film fan and a Pixar fan. But if you talk about likely to see, I think I've got 100% forecast of seeing The Avengers, 100% forecast of seeing Ant-Man, 100% forecast of seeing Jurassic World. If I had to pick one of those that I'm worried about, it might not actually be that good, though, and it's Jurassic World. Are there any of these on that summer list that you think could be a disappointment?
Jurassic World, I think it definitely could turn out to be a disappointment. I'm not worried about Avengers. I think Avengers will be good. What about Fantastic Four? Any opinion on Fantastic Four?
I'm very worried. I'm very worried. If you've seen, which of course I have, Josh Trank's, what was the name of that movie he did? The first superhero movie he did. I can't think of the movie, but I'll think of it here in a second. He's got a very different style. They're trying to kind of be edgier with Fantastic Four. The problem for me is I don't think anyone's going to care. I just don't think this is going to be. And by the time you hit August, I think people are going to be kind of, I think people are going to be kind of burnt out. You know, there's going to be two big superhero movies before that in Ant-Man. And even a few weeks before that, you've got like Mission Impossible. You know, I just look at that and I say, I don't think a lot of people are going to go see it. But, you know, it could be a good one. I mean, the cast is good. So are you at all interested in that one? Did you like the earlier Fantastic Four movies?
They were okay. I didn't think they were as good as the Avengers movies.
Oh no, not even close.
You know, it's just Chronicle. It's not the same, right?
Chronicles, the name of the movie that Josh Trank directed, which is which is quite excellent. A non-traditional superhero movie, to say the least. But I thought it was excellent. But sometimes these guys are better with their own material than they are with Joss Whedon has shown that he can do it with other people's material, and we'll see with J.J. Abrams on, he did it with Star Trek and see how he does on Star Wars, but, you know, we'll see if Josh Trank turns this into something else. Well, Matt, this has been a podcast. There's no doubt of that. It exists as a podcast.
Yes, sir.
Well, next week on the podcast, we will have our NFL draft preview show. We'll have a special guest. I don't know exactly who yet, but they will be quite special. And we'll talk about the NFL draft, which you and I are massive NFL draft fans.
Oh, I love the draft.
We'll talk about Mel Kiper's hair. We'll talk about Winston. We'll talk about Mariota and which quarterbacks we would want to build a franchise around. Of course, both of us, our answer is we've got one. His name's Tom Brady. But don't hate us. Don't hate us because we're wonderful. But anyway, thanks everybody for downloading or listening. Again, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, go subscribe to us. If you liked what you heard today, subscribe to us on iTunes or download the Podbean app. If you're listening online or you can go to ajmangum.podbean.com until we are up live on Cougar Fan. But again, thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!